Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now we've got yet another statement from Theresa May on Brexit in the Commons this afternoon. Katie, what on earth is she going to tell us that we don't already know?
We've had a few clues and it seems like she's going to tell us things that we've already heard before. So Theresa May was due to come back to the House today and present her next steps and perhaps her plan B on Brexit. But the consensus so far is that her plan B looks a lot like her plan A. So we heard about cross-party talks after she suffered her historic defeat last week, 230 votes. And there did seem to be a suggestion coming from the Prime Minister's own mouth that she was going to try and come up with a new plan which would look to talking to MPs from other parties. It seems that after the process of speaking to such MPs and speaking to figures in her cabinet, there's been a decision made that actually pivoting for Labour votes is A, risky because you can't guarantee you're going to get them, particularly when Jeremy Corbyn isn't engaging in the conversation, and too divisive. So if Theresa May were to go to a permanent customs union in the political declaration, a Labour red line, that might get her votes, but it would lose her some Tory votes and it would risk a split. And that's that point that has been pressed by figures like Brandon Lewis and Julian Smith. So her plan B is what we expected her to do all along, as far as we know, which is to try and get a concession on the backstop and through doing that bring back the Brexiteer MPs and perhaps even the DUP. This clearly isn't a foolproof plan, given that she's been trying to get a concession on the backstop for some time. And also there's an added problem, which I think there are some figures in Number 10 who think it is going to be even harder to get some form of concession on the backstop because the defeat was so large. Figures in Brussels think that if they don't play ball, Theresa May will come under pressure to go for a softer Brexit. That is where the numbers are in Parliament if you keep going down that line, and there's already always plans to try and take no deal off the table, so there's even less incentive. So not that much has changed, and the real crunch point might come when we know whether that concession can come.
And James, one report that's emerged over the past few hours is that there could be an amendment to the Good Friday Agreement, which a lot of Labour politicians in particular are saying is the end of peace in Northern Ireland.
Downing Street are very keen to play down the suggestion. I don't think this is the route that they are going down. I think there is I think as Katie said, the challenge for Downing Street is this, is if this is their approach, why didn't they, before that vote where they lost by 230 votes last week, why didn't they accept some amendment that basically said this House would back the withdrawal agreement if the following change was made to the backstop? You know, there would be nothing, to use Jean-Claude Juncker's phrase, there'd be nothing nebulous about that. That would enable them to go back to Brussels, which is essentially, the irony is, this seems to be the route that Theresa May is going down, to basically say to Brussels, if you change this bit of the backstop, we can get there. Now, I don't think they think that the EU is going to kind of rip the entire backstop out, but I think they're hoping to get enough. Now, I think this is an interesting question about where the ERG and the DUP go. This has always been a slightly odd alliance in that the ERG want, you know, a regulatory liberation Brexit, if you see what I mean. While as the DUP's principal concern is that Northern Ireland is treated exactly the same as the rest of the UK. So their interests are not entirely aligned as we go into this next bit of the process. And that, I think, is one of the really big things to watch. We saw last week Arlene Foster kind of angrily denying a report that the DUP would accept a softer Brexit. So I think that's something to watch. And then you had Jacob Rees-Mogg in the Mail on Sunday essentially sending a kind of olive branch to Number 10 saying, you know, we are still interested in a deal. And I think this is going to be one of the big things, which is there are definitely divisions within the ERG. Some people think that the procedural manoeuvrings in Parliament and the willingness of John Bercow to entertain amendments and all that kind of thing means that they should basically take the bird in hand. And there are other people who remain absolutely convinced that there's no way to stop a no-deal Brexit, so if they just hold to their guns, they'll get what they want.
Katie, in terms of the amendments that are being planned by various groups, what are the ones that we should really pay attention to?
Some amendments have already received a good amount of PR. You look at the weekend papers, and it depends what their intentions are. So on the stop no deal, head towards a softer Brexit angle, you have what was the Nick Bowles plan, it's now an Yvette Cooper amendment, which would try and enforce it. So if nothing is agreed in a few weeks' time, the government would need to extend Article 50 until something could be agreed. You have Dominic Grieve, an increasingly divisive figure in the Conservative Party, who is trying to take that a step further. And that was a plan revealed by BuzzFeed at the weekend, which would mean that not only would you have to extend Article 50, you could then have these indicative votes. And curiously, and it does get slightly techy, through this you would suddenly be able to have a minority of 300 MPs that would make the decisions. And this 300 MPs has to be from, you know, several different parties, at least this figure from one. And you look at the specifics, and it does seem as though the person who is perhaps coming up with this idea is trying to take it very closely to getting their aim. And we know what Dominic Grieve wants is a second referendum. I think that one has less of a chance of passing because it is so specific that I think some people who are unhappy with the government's handling may feel more able to try and do something like stopping No Deal than doing something which they think is going to pave the way to those who are pushing for a so-called people's vote. Then on the Leave side, we've got talk that the amendment that never was, the Morrison amendment, could be making a comeback, as time could be coming, which was the amendment which was put down by Eurosceptic backbencher last week, wasn't selected by John Bercow, but what that looked at was putting a time limit on the backstop. And the idea had been that had this been added last week, you would have been able to avoid a historic defeat because Eurosceptic MPs could have got round it. That would have then sent a clear message to Brussels that there is a way to get a deal through Parliament. That didn't happen. And it was interesting that Graham Brady, one of the Eurosceptic MPs who voted against the deal this weekend, was saying that he was disappointed that didn't happen because
the amendment didn't get selected
yeah. Because he thinks that that would have helped show that there is a way to get a deal through that helps the Leave MPs. So it might be brought back and see if John Bercow selects it this time. So I think those are the different elements here, because as well as the efforts to soften Brexit, as James touched on, there is a frustration amongst some Brexiteer MPs that they thought when they voted down this deal, it would send a clear signal to Brussels that they needed to give way on the backstop. Instead, they're now concerned that it sent a signal that you can't get a Brexit through unless it's much softer. And I think they're seeing what they can do in terms of amendment to get the message back on track.
Now, this does raise the question, not just of what backbenchers are up to, but what John Bercow is going to be up to, James.
I think John Bercow would like a place in history, but I think in his head, he has justified himself as, I'm a Speaker of House of Commons, I'm going to facilitate the will of Parliament. And basically the ends justify the means. Even if I have to play around with procedure, I want to allow most MPs to express their view. I think that is where he's heading. So the big question then becomes, does John Bercow become the kind of bogeyman that helps Number 10 persuade a whole bunch of Brexiteer MPs to come back on board, to basically say, look, you guys want to talk about certainty of this. This is what the law says. You can't be confident that there isn't going to be some procedural jiggery-pokery in the House of Commons that will allow things to be overturned. But Number 10's problem is this. Let's imagine that the Cooper Amendment passes, right? And they would have to extend Article 50 rather than go for no deal. Part of the problem there is that helps on one end, helps swing round some ERG-type MPs. But on the other hand, it makes it more difficult to get Labour votes. Because if you're trying to get the Labour votes to get you over the line, which you are going to need some of, because there is going to be a kind of hard rump of the ERG that I think wouldn't vote for almost anything, the obvious win for them to say is, I stop no deal. It becomes very difficult to say that if a House of Commons appears to have taken no deal off the table. And you see this kind of tightrope that the government is walking. I thought it was interesting on the Cabinet conference call last night how, you know, the size of a defeat and Corbyn's unwillingness to play ball changes all the dynamics around. You know, David Lidington, who, you know, I think it would be fair to say would not be unhappy with a customs union, basically admitted that, you know, you didn't have the votes for that because that would have to come with a second referendum to get anywhere near the numbers in the Commons. Second referendum is a total no-no for Theresa May. So I think in a way, Theresa May has been kind of forced back into this position. But it does beg the question of why last week the government didn't go for an amendment and then basically go back to Brussels and say, well, this is the deal that would pass the House of Commons.
And just moving on briefly to Labour, Katie, we had Keir Starmer over the weekend trying to justify the party's current position on not moving straight to campaigning for a second referendum. Is that going to hold?
Well, there's been lots of times when I think, you know, even as far back as the Labour conference, when there was a feeling that, oh, they're going to have to cave in on the second referendum. It's what the membership want. And yet it hasn't happened. And I think, given how far we've got along this road, I think there's little to suggest Jeremy Corbyn's about to come out for one anytime soon. And actually, the past week was quite interesting when we had the number of Labour MPs come forward and sign to say that they definitely wanted a second referendum. And it was in the 70s. That is not the kind of number you need to get something going. So I think they will resist for the time being. I think the problem is Jeremy Corbyn did, in a way, misplay his hand last week because we had a confidence vote that Labour lost. We've now had the Lib Dems, Vince Cable leading them, saying that they're not going to vote against the government in future confidence votes. Now, I'm sure they will eventually, but they meant that we're not going to let Labour to call them out as perhaps they would have wanted here, there, everywhere. So I think it's getting harder for Jeremy Corbyn to say, oh, you know, we're going to bring about this election imminently. But that said, given the state the Tories are in, given that Brexit is looking near impossible, Theresa May's current plan, unless she can get this concession, and that she doesn't want to go to a customs union, there is a chance that we might be getting an early election. It just won't be by the route that the leaders' office are devising. So that probably plays on slightly to Corbyn's, you know, argument against going for this yet.
And I think this early election is influencing Tory thinking as well. One of the points Michael Gove made on the Cabinet conference call last night is, look, if we're going to end up being forced into an election, it's better to be in a position in that election where most of us and our supporters agree with it. You know, this is the thing that a lot of people are saying, which is if you ever eventually get closer and closer to the Labour position and then they force you into a general election, what are you running on? And you've got this major problem on your Eurosceptic flank. And that's where you're vulnerable. So I think this fear of an election is definitely having an influence on how people are thinking at the moment.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And listeners will be delighted to hear that The Spectator hasn't yet gone bust as a result of our amazing subscription offer, where you can get 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12 and a free £20 John Lewis voucher. Do sign up at spectator.co.uk/voucher. Thanks for listening and do join us again tomorrow.